Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL 360. Chuck, I got a hilarious story I want to tell you about before we get into the preview for this week's game week. I was reading something on Football Italia, apparently with Red Bull Leipzig taking on Napoli in the Europa League this season. Leipzig have constructed a smoking room for Napoli's coach inside the locker room because he's known to smoke cigarettes in the dressing room. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that before we start today.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought it was very interesting, especially due to the fact that you're constructing something to make your opposition, your opposing coach, like, more, like, I guess, happier in the situation. It's just really weird. Like, I know chain smoking is a big deal in football, especially in Serie A, but, like, it's still just weird.
Yeah, and at the request of Napoli, all the smoke detectors in the locker room have been switched off. So, while I guess it's to make him more comfortable, I mean, should we be worried about maybe Leipzig trying to burn all the Napoli players and light them on fire before the match?
Yeah, I was going to say, it really sounds like you're just trying to turn that locker room into a tinderbox.
Well, it's funny because I have a feeling that if Jack Wilshere moves somewhere, he's definitely going to add a smoking room into his contract clause.
Wouldn't be that surprising considering Szczesny moving to Roma.
Yeah, I was going to say, they love smoking cigarettes in Serie A. But with that, I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
And today we're going to be previewing Game Week 28 of the Premier League. Rather than doing our little tiptoeing around preview, we're going to get straight down to it because my Manchester United are playing in the Champions League, and it's currently 0-0, but we will not provide any other spoilers. The first match we're going to talk about is Leicester City taking on Stoke City. Chuck, you think this is a tiger feeding frenzy given Stoke's struggles away from home?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a feeding frenzy just because Leicester has to work to find their form, and their defense is still a little suspect, especially considering the rates at which Jared and Shaqiri is creating chances right now. But it's definitely a game to be wary of both sides in.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy has scored in each of his last four matches. Meanwhile, the Potters are winless away from home in their last eight. I actually brought in Riyad Mahrez this week and dropped Paul Pogba, so I'm banking on a big game from him. Is there anyone outside of Shaqiri on Stoke City that you are looking at as a potential differential play or someone who could pop up with a goal?
I mean, I'm still running with my three-potter setup of Jack Butland, Moritz Bauer, and Eric Baxham-Choupo-Moting. I'm just not extremely confident in them this week, but I also think that they're too valuable to actually get rid of them because of this game.
Choupo-Moting has been frustrating since I brought him in. He hasn't scored in eight matches. However, given that drought, I could see him potentially getting on the score sheet, although I do obviously like Leicester City in this one, with obviously Jamie Vardy and Mahrez being the two guys to look at. Is there anyone else on Leicester City that's caught your attention in OFPL or, for that matter, in Taga?
I mean, not really, because for the most part, like, lately Leicester's been kind of meh. Usually the biggest benefactor of Riyad Mahrez being on the field is Mark Albrighton, but without Mahrez, he's been pretty crap lately.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we always give a shout to Wilfred and Didi and Taga just because he racks up defensive stuff. I don't see Leicester keeping a clean sheet in this one, but at the same time, if I had to make a bet on it, I would probably give Leicester the goal, maybe two goal edge in this one.
Yeah, no, I don't really see either side keeping a clean sheet in this one.
Another match that's going to be interesting, which I think there could be clean sheets in, Bournemouth will be visited by Newcastle in a battle of the teams trying to establish themselves as, I guess, what, quality mid-table sides?
Is there such thing as a quality mid-table side?
The best of the rest, for that matter.
Okay, I guess that's the best you can really ask for right now.
In terms of injury news, Islam Soleimani has been training, and he should be fit for this match. Do you think he's going to get on the score sheet?
I don't think he gets on the score sheet, but I do think if he starts that he allows other people, Kennedy, to get on the score sheet. The big question is, as always, who's in net for Newcastle?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick someone, it would probably be Dubravka, just because he's coming off such a good debut against United. And he not only played well and everything, but they looked more confident with him back there than comparatively with Darlow or Rob Elliott, who's struggled to stay fit lately. Would you lean towards there being goals in this one or towards a clean sheet?
I don't ever know what to expect from Bournemouth. Obviously, it's nice that they're home in this one. But I'd lean more towards Newcastle keeping a clean sheet in this one, because there's really no way that Bournemouth's going to keep a clean sheet.
I like the defenders in this match from both sides. I always like the Cherries midfielders just because of their speed, and when they win, it's usually because their midfield creates at least 6 or 7 chances. So those would be the guys I would look at. In particular, if you're looking for a cheap guy, Lewis Cook. I'm still waiting on him to have a goal and an assist match. So I'm just going to keep saying it every time we talk about them. Yeah. Anybody in particular from the Newcastle defense you like this week?
I mean, every week I like Jamal Lascelles. Outside of him, you never really know what you're going to get with Newcastle defenders, because you also just don't really know who's going to start.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been Lascelles and Yedlin as the two nailed-on guys in that back four. And, I mean, you've had rotating at the other center-back position, although I think the biggest thing, if you're looking to stream a defender this week, to look at this match, just because I think people are going to assume there will be goals in it, just because the Cherries have popped up with a bunch lately. And while they're going to be looking to rebound, I don't see Eddie Howe going out and trying to play too expansive, and him probably rather not playing for a draw, but definitely playing for a result in this one after that, you know, absolute collapse at Huddersfield Town.
Yeah, no, I do think he's going to play for a result. I just think that Rafa's good enough to lock up shop with Newcastle.
Yeah, interesting thing to consider with this match as well is if Newcastle win, they will be even on points with the Cherries, with them sitting on 28 and Bournemouth on 31 right now. Moving on to another match, do you smell a double clean sheet alert in Brighton versus Swansea?
That I do, because Swansea doesn't concede, and Brighton's defense is really good at home.
Yeah, the Swans have conceded just 5 goals since game week 21. Only Tottenham and Manchester United have conceded less during that span. The Swans also got a big injury boost with the news that Alfie Mawson, who picked up a knock in warm-ups before the FA Cup match at the weekend, is back in training and is expected to be fit. That is a humongous boost ahead of this game, since he's the anchor of that back line.
Yeah, basically, I would start any defender in this game, and I would be very wary about anyone else.
Yeah, I like Mike van der Hoorn. He's been doing well. He's only 5% owned in Tauga, so he's a Swan defender to look at. And while I don't think there's going to be goals in this one, if there is a goal from either side, I think it's going to come from Jose Izquierdo. He's got 2 goals, 2 assists in his last 4 starts.
Yeah, he's been and on fire lately.
Yeah, his newfound confidence has been instrumental in Brighton's uptick. In fact, he's actually played a hand on 4 of their last 6 goals across their last couple matches. So I guess we're both hot on the clean sheets here. Looking at Brighton, so that's the usual suspects in Duff and your other boy at the back. Duff and Dunk. Yep. Duffy and Dunk. D&D.
But not Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Is there anyone else on Brighton who catches your attention?
I mean, we're going to talk about another person later, but not really for anyone that I truly want to play this week.
What about if you need to stream a goalkeeper in Togo, would you be interested in Matt Ryan?
Isn't he too high owned to really be a streaming keeper?
Well, right now he's owned in 37%, so he's right around that area. Meanwhile, if you look at Swansea, I mean, you can't get Fabianski.
Yeah, I just know that in every league that I'm in, neither one of them is actually available.
Yeah, Fabianski's been excellent this season. As usual, he's owned in 84% of leagues. So, yeah, I mean, I think Matt Ryan's a good shout if he's available in your league, although 37% might be a tougher grab than I was expecting to make. Moving on to another match I don't think is going to have a ton of goals in it, Burnley versus Southampton. The big news coming out of here is Tom Heaton played in a closed-door friendly. So does this mean it's the beginning of the end for Pope?
Well, I mean, it was unfortunately always the beginning of the end for Pope because no matter how well he did this season, once Tom Heaton was healthy, he was going to come back into his actual starting position. It's going to be more interesting to see what happens during the summer when, due to age, I could very easily see Burnley cashing in on Tom Heaton. But as of right now, this is Tom Heaton's team, and that's just unfortunate for Nick Pope owners. The real question is just when does Tom Heaton come back? Because I doubt he starts this game due to the fact that this is his first real appearance in game time. But probably in like the next 2 weeks, you should start pivoting off of Pope and either to Heaton or someone else.
Yeah, if I had to put a potential return date on it, you have them playing this game and then they're playing against West Ham and then they blank in game week 31, I believe. So potentially around game week 32, I would expect him to be back in between the sticks. And as you said, I think this is more of a showcasing to boost his sale value rather than saying
it's... The big thing is like, I wouldn't even recommend pivoting from Pope to Heaton because the big calling card with Burnley was that they were keeping clean sheets, but they haven't kept one in seven games. Like, while they've only given up one or two goals in most of the games in that time span, they're really not getting the job done as injuries have begun to catch up to them.
Yeah, it's crazy. Their last six matches, they've conceded a goal in each of them, but they haven't conceded multiple goals in a match. They're going to be getting a potential boost with Chris Wood back in the picture. I was a huge Chris Wood guy in the beginning of the season, and I was really pissed that he's missed so much time. Is he someone you're interested in scooping right now? He's available. He's only owned in 18% of leagues in Taga.
He's a forward with a pulse. Therefore, he is on my radar.
If he gets the start somehow this weekend, would you be interested in adding him right before when the lineups come out and potentially starting him against Southampton?
I don't think I'd start him against Southampton because they're riding the ship. And outside of his aerials, meaning you'll probably get like 7 or 8 points out of him, I don't think you'd get much else.
Yeah. As you said, Southampton, they're coming off the couple interesting results. I mean, they got beat down by Liverpool, but it is what it is. And then prior to that match, they were unbeaten in four games. Do you think that this match is tilted in their favor, giving Burnley's poor run of form? Or do you think that this is going to end more towards the lines of a 1-1 draw or maybe even a goalless draw?
Well, the thing is like, Burnley's been performing extremely well until, like, the very end of games, during which James Ward-Prowse is going to make them pay. So I see this being another 1-0 Burnley loss.
Okay, I think I'm going to back my boy Sean Dyche. I think they're going to rebound. I don't know if they're going to get the win, because if it hasn't come from good Munson Berg, they don't really have anyone else to create or score. I'm going to say I think it's going to be a goalless draw. Now, I'm kind of operating under the pretense that Chris Wood isn't back. If Chris Wood plays, though, I think he's going to score, whether that's off the bench or in the starting 11. So it's kind of a multifaceted prediction I'm giving. 1-0 with Wood in the action and 0-0 without him.
So basically you just don't want to commit to anything is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I just love Chris Wood. Big Wood guy. But, I mean, looking at it from kind of picking winner's perspective, I would call this match a straight-up pick'em because, you know, there's not really much between these clubs right now. The next match we're going to talk about should have goals in it. Liverpool will be welcoming West Ham. The big thing, rather than doing the normal who should you start from Liverpool or whatever, I just want to lay down the fact that in home matches, Mo Salah is averaging a goal or an assist approximately every 64 minutes. So he's the guy, I think, this week to captain.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, if someone's in the lineup for Liverpool, then you should start them.
Yeah, especially against West Ham. I mean, the Hammers have looked better, and they're going to be at close to full strength this weekend. Lanzini could return, although it's unclear whether he'll be in the starting 11 or not. But, I mean, they got Arnie back. Arnie and Antonio both were in the 11 during game week 27. Arnie got a goal. Antonio got an assist. So the Hammers are definitely on the up. What does Lanzini's return, I guess, more pressingly mean for Yao Mario?
At this point, I'd assume it means that once he's back, that Mario becomes a super sub.
So do you think, I know we talked about a little bit last episode, so we can do a little brief thing. With Lanzini, assuming that he comes back and he's fine and he's in the starting 11 moving forward, what formation do you think David Moyes will probably prefer from here on out?
I'd like to assume that with the success that they've had, especially in attack with it, that they're going to stick with the 4-3-3 just because that suits Chicharito better. Because, you really don't want to put him up top as a completely lone forward. You do want to have support out to the side of him.
Yeah, an interesting thing to note is eventually Arthur Masuaku will be back in the picture. So that will give them another option on the wing. Although right now it looks like Mikel Antonio, Mr. Utility, is locked in on the left flank.
Yeah, the question is just how far back is he going to move with Lanzini coming back?
Yeah, I mean, if you have him, I'm not worried about him because he's going to get points no matter what because he's so good going forward. Although, in terms of upside, I would like to see him play a little bit further up the pitch, considering the combination of him overlapping with Arnie on the left side is a combination I definitely like. But I guess before we move on to the next match, one little quick thing. Would you be interested in trading for either Arnie or Mikel Antonio, assuming that the trade deadline hasn't passed in your league?
Arnie, yes. Antonio, no. Just because I can't trust Mikel Antonio's hamstrings. Arnie's been relatively healthy for his entire career, and I'd bank on him being healthy until the end of the season. Antonio might pull a Daniel Sturridge and pull up in the third minute of this game.
Yeah, so if you look at right now, Arnie's got 7 goals and 5 assists in 19 appearances. What do you think it would take to trade for him? Let's say you're in a 12-team league.
Well, lately, Arnie's been a forward one. You're probably, due to how scarce forwards are, you're going to need to trade a forward two and then probably a midfielder three to get him.
So you think if you offered, let's see here, if you offered someone I don't know who's around him in the rankings. If you offered Richarlison and...
I mean, I try to get Richarlison straight up and hope that people are still valuing Richarlison off of his value at the beginning of the season than his value now.
Okay, I mean, maybe a better way to put it is this. Who would you rather have for the rest of the season, Zaha or Arnie?
Arnie. I don't know exactly when Zaha is going to feature, and I don't really know if he's ever going to hit the form that he was hitting with Ruben Loftus-Cheek in the lineup.
So if you were a Zaha owner, would you consider offering him for Arnie?
I would. I just don't think that you're going to be able to get that done straight up with just Zaha. All
right, well, that's just something good for everyone to ponder if they're looking to make a move. The next match we're going to talk about is a battle of the damned. No Daniel Sturridge for West Brom, no Aaron Moy for Huddersfield Town. Goalless draw?
I don't know.
A second. You do remember that Huddersfield Town scored 4 goals last week.
Yeah. The issue is the fact that we don't know how they're really going to operate without Aaron Moy for an entire game. And I also don't think West Brom's just going to lay down the way that Bournemouth did. The issue is that West Brom's back line leaves holes big enough to drive a truck through.
Yeah, I think on the Terriers, they've only scored multiple goals in 5 matches this season. I didn't do the numbers to see where that ranks, but that's got to be towards the bottom of the league, probably right around with West Brom. But I guess the biggest thing is whether David Wagner uses a 4-3-3, which he's preferred away, or he uses the 4-5-1 that's gotten them their wins this season. I guess how do you think the best way to cope without Aaron Moy is?
I think that you'd probably want to go with the 4-5-1 just because that allows Alex Pritchard to play more in a more central position than he would in the 4-3-3. The issue is just the fact that everyone behind Pritchard is going to be super defensive midfielders, because you'd assume it'll be either Billing and Hogg or Billing and Danny Williams. And
yep,
none of them are really shuttlers.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably would be best suited to play. No, I don't think he would do this. But if they played Hogg, Billing, and Williams in a 3, and then they had Ince and Pritchard in front of them, and played with Mr. Brace up top, it's a little bit unconventional for how he likes to play. Yeah, but I mean, that's probably their best lineup to get a result in that. Have your 3 best out-and-out attackers, and then just pack the rest of the guys in.
Yeah, but David Wagner does like to attempt to stress defense, and that would just be an extremely imbalanced formation for them to play. It's really tough to envision how this team will line up without Moy, just because he's been their most important player on the entire year. And while I like Alex Pritchard, I really don't know if he can function alone.
Yeah, my worry is that if they go to a 4-3-3, I don't know where they would play Pritchard. They might even drop him to the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I'd assume if they went to a 4-3-3 that Pritchard and Ince would have to be your wings at that point.
Yeah, but I know that Wagner has really liked Ravi Van La Parra lately. So that's what I think. What do you think he would probably go with?
I think Van La Parra could be very good off the bench for him, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's something to ponder. I'm really interested in this match because this has humongous relegation implications, with Huddersfield on 27 points and West Brom currently at the bottom of the table with 20. So both teams are going to really have to go after it, even though neither manager, I think, will really want to. Anyone on West Brom you're interested in? Since we gave Huddersfield so much talk.
The only person on West Brom that had intrigued me up until this point was Daniel Sturridge. I mean, Kieran Gibbs will be back for this game, and he has been useful at times this season. It's just, till further notice, it's really tough to trust anyone on West Brom.
Yeah, I mean, I like Matt Phillips. He did play pretty well in that defeat against Chelsea, and they were some composure in the box away from getting one or two goals in that match. But the thing with him is you never know what you're going to get because he gets hurt so much. He could get hurt in warm-ups with the way he's going. But I think if he's in the starting 11, he could definitely be worth a look if you need to stream a midfielder. And then there's always Chris Brunt, who is just unreal when that team attacks.
Yeah.
But outside of those two, I don't really see a ton of value there. A match I do think that has value, though, is going to be Watford versus Everton at Vicarage Road.
Yeah, this is going to be quite the interesting one. I'd honestly go with Everton in this one, just because of the fact that Gylfi's finally rolling again, and he's good enough to single-handedly keep them out of the relegation battle.
Yeah, I mean, considering Watford got that win against Chelsea last time, they're slightly favored in this match.
Just Chelsea also laid down for Watford, so there's that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's should be a pick'em, but I think Omar Nias has just been too good up top, and given how Watford's defense has been hit or miss, I think he's going to cause problems for them. I think I would definitely pick Everton in this one. I could see this being a 2-1, maybe even a 3-2 match.
Yeah, there will be goals. I'd feel more comfortable starting Everton defenders in this one just because of the fact that the way they play, they're more likely to rack up peripheral points than the Watford defenders. But overall, I wouldn't be extremely comfortable with any defenders in this.
Yeah, looking at the Watford attackers, what is your current thoughts on De La Feu? I mean, he's been really good since he's come in.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a useful forward. He's obviously not someone that I necessarily want to, like, pin my weeks on, but he's definitely a very useful fantasy asset.
Yeah, I like him a lot, and he's back in full force, which is good to see just as a player who kind of, I thought, got a rough run of it when he was at Everton a couple of years back. Before we move on, looking at Watford's defenders, just because they've been known to do nothing and then go off, if you're feeling lucky, is this one of the weeks to stream Hollabas or Janmaat?
Is it more that you're feeling a little deranged than feeling lucky? Because usually at the point that you're looking to stream them, you're in pretty dire straits to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, picking up and starting them is equivalent to sending like a 3 o'clock at night you up text, but sometimes those texts work. So with that said, if you were feeling lucky, would you rather have Hollabas or Janmaat this week?
I mean, I'd rather have neither just because I see a -5 in their future.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their production, it's like nothing, a couple negatives, 18 or 20. But I know that as a person who's a big fan of attacking outside backs, cough, cough, Patrick Van Aanholt, like to give them a shot whenever possible. Yeah. Before we get too out of hand, let me get a prediction from you.
I'm going to go 3-1 Everton.
Okay, I'm going to go 3-2 Everton. So I think we're both in the same page about that. Speaking of Crystal Palace, they will be hosting Tottenham, coming off a tie against Rochdale. What's up with your boys, dude? I thought they kind of had that match in hand.
I mean, I don't care. I expected there to be some semblance of a letdown after the Juventus game, and I'm perfectly fine with them needing a replay versus Rochdale just due to the fact that they have the squad depth to roll over them when they come to Wembley. It's much more important that they take care of this game just because of how tight things are getting with the top four. And I do fully believe that they will come back and absolutely steamroll Crystal Palace in this game.
Speaking of squad depth, with Toby Alderweireld back in the picture, who do you think gets the start at the back for them?
I'd like to assume that Toby returns, so that and that'll mean that they'll go back to a three-man back line. What I'd like to happen is that Dele gets sent to the sidelines for a second, but no one actually knows who's going to end up being dropped.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that this could potentially be a match where maybe Lucas Moura gets a start. Although, I mean, do you think that that's a possibility?
I mean, I really don't know if Lucas Moura will get a start in the league for the rest of the season, unless it's a double game week, honestly. He was obviously great playing against Rochdale and like scored a goal, but it's Rochdale.
Can you believe he's 62% owned in Taga?
I cannot. I told anyone that will listen to me to stay away from him. And literally, unless I saw him in the lineup like the day of a match, I wouldn't even bother rostering him.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind considering how good Eric Lamela was in the Champions League. And he's only 12% owned right now.
Well, because people feel burnt from holding Lamela for most of the season, myself included.
Looking at Crystal Palace, I mean, they're starting to get some players back. Do you have any interest in them in fantasy this week?
I would start Solaroth or Benteke in this game. Honestly, I'd probably start Andros Townsend too. I don't think any of them are going to score, but they're going to get off enough shots and win enough aerial duels, and Townsend's going to have enough successful take-ons that they'll be useful. Same with Johan Kabay. Like, he should at least get enough points in this game to be useful. Outside of that, not really touching anyone.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is going to be probably Spurs 2-0.
Oh, I'm going 4-1.
Oh, wow.
Spurs have some goals in them after this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. Crystal Palace have proved tricky at home, though. But, I mean, I think they're definitely going to win by at least two goals, whether it's 2-0 or 3-0 or 4-1.
When Spurs played Burnley, they were tricky at home, too, and then they went past them and netted three.
A match that I think is going to be rather difficult for my boys. Manchester United are going to be taking on Chelsea at Old Trafford. I'm just going to go ahead and say I got rid of Paul Pogba this week and brought in Mahrez.
I don't know what's going on. Paul Pogba this week and brought in Kevin De Bruyne.
I don't know what's up with him. I mean, they're playing the formation that he wants to play today.
Well, he's now in the game because Ander Herrera got hurt.
Yeah, so I don't know what to do with them. I don't know what to think about United right now. I mean, Lukaku's yet to score against the Big Six this season. As much as I want to say I think they're going to win, I see this match probably ending in a draw.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw. I don't really see anyone winning, and this is a classic game that Mourinho is just going to sit back and defend it.
Yeah, looking at Chelsea, Willian's been excellent lately. He had two goals in the FA Cup, and then he scored another excellent goal against Barcelona. Do you think he's done enough to earn himself a start against United?
Depends on if a Chelsea striker is going to actually play against United. If Morata features, then unfortunately Willian may go back to the bench just because that's Hazard's preferred side. But I can't pick a Chelsea lineup nowadays anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to want to stay away from this match in fantasy if I can. I do own Antonio Valencia, so I'll be hoping for a clean sheet out of that. But if
yeah, I Man own United, Hazard in a league, and that's about it.
Yeah, if Man United park the bus and Chelsea play like they did against Barcelona, I don't have a good feeling about this.
Yeah, because Eden Hazard is going to score a wonder goal from outside the box against you, like he almost did against Barca.
All right, let's take it easy with that, all right? We don't have to add insult to injury. But, yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to go with – I'm going to say 1-1 in this game.
I'm going to go with another double clean sheet.
Ooh, okay. Okay, okay. A match I can guarantee there won't be a clean sheet in is Manchester City-Arsenal, which will bring the game week to a wrap. It's going to be played on Thursday, I believe.
Yeah, so this is the game that has been throwing the fantasy community in a flux because this is now going to stretch this match week all the way to Thursday.
Yeah, with Man City playing in the League Cup at the weekend. This is weird to think about that we're going to have to wait that long.
We're in uncharted territory at this point because I cannot think of the last time that the last game of a game week has been this far in the future.
Yeah, I don't think since I've been doing this professionally that it's happened. The good thing for Arsenal, though, they're going to have some more time for always injured Aaron Ramsey and always sick Mesut Ozil to potentially be fit for this match.
Yeah, the issue is, what if someone gets injured in the League Cup and you can't swap them before the other Sunday games?
Yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and say, if you own Aguero or Sterling, KDB, you're fine, but I would stay away from Arsenal this week.
Yeah, I mean, I'd feel relatively comfortable playing Aubameyang just because of the fact that Danny Welbeck's not gonna start over him if he's healthy. I'm rolling with Ozil because he's too good to sit, and then yeah, outside of that, I don't have the slightest clue.
Yeah, I'm definitely staying away from their defenders. I could see this one being like a 5-2 Man City or like a 4-2, something like that. I don't think there's going to be any defending in this match.
Yeah, this definitely has the looks of Arsenal-Liverpool.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be. I'm excited to watch it, though. It should be an entertaining match. With the matches covered, we're going to get into some listener questions. The first one comes to us thanks to Satish on Twitter. Thoughts on Heaton as he returns to training? Is he worth adding and stashing away, or do you just stay away completely?
If you're a Pope owner, I guess you can stash him. I'm really not concerning myself that much with Burnley defenders, so I'm kind of just like, it's whatever at this point.
And he also wants to know any punts for this weekend.
So I don't really view any of these guys as actually being very good, but they are people who have racked up either a goal or assist or multiples in Kiese Young's case. And that's Dale Steffens of Brighton, who's owned in 4% of leagues, Roberto Pereira of Watford in 2% of leagues, and Kiese Young of Swansea in 1%. Preferably, in a perfect world, you don't have to play any of them because outside of those games where they've gotten about 20 points, most of them outside of Pereira are averaging about 4 to 5 points a game, and I don't really see that changing much considering their opposition. But they're at least very low-owned midfielders that have a shot at going for big points over the weekend. Also, just for the record, we qualified punts as under 5% owned in Taga Leagues.
Yeah, Pereira's an interesting guy to look at. He's been explosive off the bench. He had that goal and assist against Chelsea, but he hasn't really been in the starting 11 lately. If he's in there, I think he's definitely worth a shout against Everton. The guy I'm looking at, who I mentioned earlier, is Jose Izquierdo, just because while I don't think there will be goals in that match, if there's one from Brighton, he's surely going to have a hand on it.
And is Izquierdo still owned in 5% of leagues?
Yeah, exactly 5%.
Really?
Yeah. even given his form lately.
Goodness.
Yeah, he's so quick on the wing, and while he does kind of lack composure, at the end of, you know, when he really needs that final finish, he's scored some freaking bangers this season from outside the box. And I mean, if you're looking at Brighton, the only place goals really come from is him creating them with Murray or Knockhart scoring them.
Yep, that sounds about right. I'm really angry at myself for not noticing that he was owned in only 5% of leagues, but that's because I've been the 5% of leagues where he's owned in all of them.
Sticking with questions relevant to this game week, Sly King Tales has a question for us. Outside of the top six, if you had to pick four clean sheets this game week, which teams would you choose?
But I'm calling a double clean sheet in Brighton Swansea. Then I have Southampton keeping a clean sheet. Then outside of that fourth team's tough.
I mean, the one I have, and it's kind of dependent upon the formation Huddersfield Town goes with. Because if they play defensive. Yeah,
that's the closest thing I can think of to the fourth one is Huddersfield.
Yeah, the four I would be looking at would be probably coming from two matches with Brighton, Swansea, and then West Brom, Huddersfield, if Huddersfield play a defensive formation. Because that is, while it might not seem like a huge thing, if they pack the midfield, it's going to be tough for West Brom to break them down without Daniel Sturridge, because Rondon isn't going to be able to overpower Schindler and Zanka in the air.
No, instead he's going to score another ridiculous volley, right?
Oh, God, yeah. He's not very good at soccer. It's crazy to think that he was, like, being pinned for a move to Barcelona, like, a year and a half ago. Really? Right? I mean, talk about someone's stock who's dropped. Yeah, he was wanted by a lot of guys. He was getting rated as for like $40 million.
I don't remember that one, but
I remember when I was doing season previews, they were talking about how Rondon's like fallen off the face of the earth because he's had these big scoring droughts.
Yep, I mean I drafted him to start this season, and that didn't work out too well for me.
We got another question from John Staples. Will Man City starting midfielders such as Sané and David Silva game time decrease as it gets closer to the end of the season, especially if they wind up winning the title before the season ends?
I'd say yes, because you have to give time to youngsters like Phil Foden or they're going to leave.
Yeah, I mean, you got him, you got Zinchenko, who can kind of play anywhere. I'm assuming they're going to want to get Gundogan more time, just because he's finally been able to stay fit for a bit. And then obviously you're going to have Gabriel Jesus coming back. And then even at the back, you'll probably have more rotation with Laporte in the picture.
Yeah, the end of the season is going to be a complete crapshoot for City, as they will likely be pushing all of their marbles into Champions League.
If they were, for some reason, get knocked out of the Champions League, though, I wouldn't be as worried about Sané and Silva's playing time.
I mean, if they get knocked out of Champions League too early, I'd be more worried about Pep's future than anything.
Yeah, since they got out of the gates so hot. Next question, going to be looking down the line a bit from FPL Hazardous. Which non-Liverpool players should managers target for game week 31 that also have good rest of the season value?
All right, my first is Christian Benteke. He's been extremely consistent for the second half of the season, and Palace really doesn't have that bad of a fixture list to end the season, and you could probably get him on the cheap, honestly, probably for like midfielder three, forward two-ish three value.
Yeah, Benteke is an interesting one just because the goals have not been there this season. But like you said, if you look at the schedule, they have Bournemouth, Brighton, Watford, Leicester, Stoke, West Brom to close out the year after their tough run of fixtures. The guy I'm looking at, the guy I love, I'm so happy he's back in the team, my boy Riyad. They have a great run of fixtures. I mean, they have Spurs, And then they have the match against Arsenal, which will probably come in the double game week. I mean, he has a great run of fixtures. Stoke, the Cherries, West Brom, Brighton, Newcastle, Burnley, Southampton, Crystal Palace, West Ham. I brought him in this week, and he's someone I really like moving forward.
Yeah, no, I've loved him all season. The big thing is just going to be, what's it going to take to get him?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at that more from OFPL perspective. To get Mahrez right now, it's actually an interesting one. Interesting, because we never actually talked about trading for him when his future was uncertain. I mean, he's averaging roughly 14 points per match. If you look at the midfielder rankings, kind of where he stacks up, you're going to have to pay for him, even though he's not as high in the standings as you would expect him to be. I mean, just kidding. He's actually fourth in midfield. He's the fourth best midfielder right now.
Yeah, he's kind of good.
So to trade for him, I think that's like impossible pretty much, unless you gave up a forward one.
But a midfielder that is possible, Gylfi.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna contest there. Well, I would prefer to maybe buy high on a bigger name guy who's probably going to be a little bit more consistent. I do think there is value with Gylfi, especially if he keeps playing like he played last week.
I mean, Gylfi has been consistent. It's just unfortunately been a consistent 8 to 10 points. But as Everton starts to click and... again, they have a relatively easy schedule to close out the season. He should be able to hit more of the highs of the 15-20s that we were expecting from him.
Yeah, I think they're both guys to look at. What are your thoughts on Theo Walcott?
I'd see Theo more as a sell-high candidate than anyone that you want to buy right now. But now he actually is moving into the consideration for OFPL.
And then another question to wrap up from John Staples. Who would you rather have, Dele Alli or Wilfred Zaha for the rest of the season?
I've already littered all over this episode with my lack of trust in Zaha for the rest of the season. So I've got to say Dele. While he's had an underwhelming season, he's still been a pretty good midfielder for Spurs.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm going to say Zaha. Now, the thing that I'm assuming is that if Spurs keep going in the Champions League and Zaha comes back at full fitness and stays healthy, mainly because of the schedule. Otherwise, I would like Dele. But considering I think they're going to get past Juventus and they're going to make a run in the Champions League, even though the betting odds don't look too hot on that, I think Zaha would definitely be the guy to have, in my opinion. You frazzled that I'm actually backing Spurs to do well in the Champions League?
No, because I think it's pretty... not to say that it's actually expected, but it's not as surprising now that Spurs are actually doing well in Champions League. And because of the fact that Tizer decided on stupid away goals, all Spurs really need to do to advance against Juventus is lock up shop.
Yeah, I mean, they've set themselves up to go through. But with that said, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for listening to what was our 16th episode of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
And may your arrows be green.